freaking Otto!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
Jamie Huard just punched me in the kidney.
On Seattle Sports.
We're going to do you on the internet.
Doesn't really work that way, Sherm. This is a show that has my name on it.
It kind of does, though.
Brought to you by Carter's Subaru, Volkswagen, and Acura.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
I'm so sorry this didn't work out yesterday as it was supposed to at 9:30. A little scheduling snafu, etc. And, of course, I said we're waiting on Pete for the final time. And we were waiting, as it turns out, for about, 22 and a half hours. But we had the opportunity to tape a nice, long, extended, in-depth interview with Pete right after the show. It will take up the majority of this next hour. So without further ado, let's start the final Pete Carroll Show.
We're just getting warmed up! Come on, let's go!
The Pete Carroll Show. The first word from the Seahawks head coach every Monday at 9:30 with Brock and Salk. Presented by the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook and Top Fitness.
Yep, there it is for the final time. The Pete Carroll Show open, Coach. I'm going to miss your little look that you give me every time as that open plays. Chuckling about the sponsors, hoping for pizza next year, maybe. It's emotional. This is the last Pete Carroll Show. Thanks so much for doing it with us.
You got it. You got it. Happy to do it. You guys have been a lot of fun. We've been through a lot of stuff together, and let's make it a good show here.
What was Wednesday like for you, your final press conference and saying goodbye in the building?
It's a whirlwind, you know, and there's so many people that connect with and just so many things happening and trying to do it really well and make sure that we touched all the bases that we needed to, and everybody was coordinated and on it. You know, I was up in the middle of the night just making sure that everything was right. So it was very busy, you know, the emotion was there, but it was a lot more just receiving people, you know, and coaches and players coming by, guys calling and all that kind of stuff. So I think pretty typically, you know, got pretty much swamped, but that was good. It was good to be active and going, and press conference was important, and then everything that followed too was very active and very moving because of all of the coaches and people that we needed to see, you know, and so. So, you know, it is what it is.
Was the music your touch?
Of course. Gap band, man. Gotta get up early in the morning.
what were you sending a little message with the music?
Just the Gap band was always with us, and there was always a good feeling about if you want to do something good, you got to get up early in the morning. Mm. Early in the morning. So that's what that was about.
How many calls and text messages, Pete, from the time the news breaks? And I mean, I can't even imagine how many hit your phone.
Hundreds. There's hundreds, really. Texts and phone calls and stuff. It's just, I can't catch up with it all. But I'm working at it. But it's really nice and flattering and warm to feel that there's that much response. It's just a pretty connected response. You know, it's very similar. I mean, people feel the same about it, which is, I'm not quite sure how to evaluate that, but. So it's been really nice, though.
Any, I'm sure they're all meaningful in their own way, but any jump out to you, surprise you, might surprise us? Anything kind of that we might find interesting?
Well, I'll give you a range from Rachel Maddow to Bill Parcells.
They weren't together, right?
That's a bit of a range from Shell Dog down in the jungle down in South Central to across the board. So I mean, I'm hearing from all walks, from the islands, and you know, people from the beach and people from the hood. So it's been really rewarding and wonderful, and I feel very, you know, very grateful to have that much following and friendship and care.
If that was Wednesday, what was it like on Tuesday or Monday, whenever it was, your final meeting with Jody?
It was very intense, you know, and really crucial. It was crucial to me that I was able to express my thoughts and my feelings about it and my concerns about moving forward and trying to help as much as possible to make it, you know, to bring clarity to the decision making and what to expect and all of that. It was and I was really pleased that we had the intensity of it because it needed it, and also the depth that we went to so to make sure that Jody could feel what this is and what it takes, and, you know, what the expectations that come along with this job and these decisions that you make, and how difficult it is to do this well and to do it right. You know, it's hard to do the coaching job well. It's hard to do the selection process well, you know, to get the right guys to you know, to answer the call. So and because we care so much, because we all care so much, that it was really intense. And it wasn't uncomfortable at any time. It was just we need to get to it. And we were able to do that.
Can you help me understand a little bit? Because I understand you said it was a mutual decision. You also sort of indicated that you fought to remain the coach. So how do those two things work together?
The first thing that we do is we go through the season and what happened and what took place and what were the reasons why, what could have done better along the way, and what would be the choices to move ahead, because you're competing, you're trying to figure it out, you know. And so I have very, very strong feelings about what we did and where we screwed it up and where we didn't, you know, come through the way we wanted to, and what we did well. And so we just needed to touch on all of that. And the perception that the media has, you know, on the outside, and it's not always accurate. You know, you do the best you can, though, but you don't know the stories, you don't know the insides, you don't know, you know, we don't share with you guys all of the details of the exchanges and what's the personalities and all of that stuff. And that needs to be brought to the surface. And so that's what happens in those. So that's the initial part of it, is trying to get at the essence of it. And then, okay, what is the essence of the adjustments that are necessary? And that's where the, maybe don't see eye to eye on, you know, because, you know, I see it one way, and I think I got a way to fix it. And I'm not going to kind of halfway fix it. I'm trying to fix it so it's perfect. So I've got, you know, real precise and specific thoughts, and they may not see it that way. They may not agree with it. They may not see that that's the right answer, or that's not the answer that makes them feel good. And the difficult part, if you guys could know, is it's really hard because they're not football people, you know, they're not coaches. And so to get to the real details of it, it's really difficult for other people. It's difficult for me to convey stuff to you guys. Mm-hmm. And as much Brock as you have in your background, there's times when, you know, I kind of shrug my shoulders. Okay, that's as far as we got. And, you know, I can't take you any farther in this time frame we have. And mm-hmm. you're going to understand it that way, and we're going to see it another way. And so we're not going to see eye to eye. That's basically just common, you know, dynamics, you know, and that you deal with. So
You have such an amazing feel meter, Pete, with 50 years of coaching. You've been around it. You've seen it all the mountaintops and everything else. Did you sat with us on Monday morning. Did you have any feeling, any inkling, any sense that these meetings with ownership would go this way or could go this way?
I knew that we were going to be challenged, you know, because every year it feels like that. Every year it feels like that, that you're going to be challenged, and you're challenged by opinions that are kind of media opinions, you know, because what else do people have when you're outside of the game? You know, how could you know other than what you guys talk about on the radios and what the articles say and what the pundits are you know, drawing conclusions on? That's so you have to go in realizing that that's what you're dealing with, and then try to talk through to get to the essence of stuff. So that's always going to be a challenge, because when you don't have, you know, legitimate dyed-in-the-wool football people calling the shots, then you have to try to make sense of it, just like we try to make sense of it for your audience. It's no mm-hmm. it's no different, you know. And these meetings, these are wide open now. There's, you know, there's always some strategy going on, you know, with what we're revealing and what we're letting out, because we have to maintain our, you know, our uniqueness and the qualities that keep us separate from other teams and people and stuff. So that's just a battle that you wage with the media some, and, you know, hopefully, respectfully, they understand. You guys try to understand that, and you do. And we do the best we can, because I want to be straight up with you guys, you know, and try to help you as much as possible. But yet there's a lot of stuff that we can't get to. Mm-hmm. There's so much personal stuff, you know, and so many inferences that have carryover and clout, you know. The things we say something about a player did this or screw this up, or who made that call, you know, talk about the, you know, the call on the goal line at the Super Bowl. You still don't know what happened, you know, and that stuff, it's stuff like that, that, you know, you're just never going to know. And that's how it goes, you know, as you're protecting the people that you care for, and you protect your everything, your integrity and everything, you know. So
was that your most challenging day?
Yesterday?
No, the day you just alluded to with the goal line Super Bowl end.
Yeah, that's the bottom. That was the bottom moment, you know. Yeah, I knew it the instant that it happened. It was, you were never going to go lower than that, you know, in disappointment and frustration and hurt to so many. And then the explanation of it and all that was going to be difficult and challenging as well. And stuff you take with you.
All right, there you go. That is the first few minutes of our interview with Pete Carroll. There is a lot longer to go. You'll hear some really good stories. You'll hear a lot more about his philosophy. I think you've already heard quite a bit about Jody Allen and the decision-making, but there's more on that to come. Stick around. We've got a lot more with Pete Carroll coming up next on Brock and Salk.
This is Brock and Salk.
Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports App.
All right, we continue on with our exclusive elongated Pete Carroll interview. It was really kind of the coach to give us a whole bunch of time to tape this yesterday. We've already given you the beginning of it. And of course, you can find every minute of every show, including this whole interview, at seattlesports.com or wherever you get your podcast right now. Let's get back to our interview with the coach.
You know, Salk and I, a little bit like you and John, have been linked together for like 15 years. And unlike you and John, you know, Salk left me and then I left him. And so, I mean, in totality, we've been divorced a couple times and back together through all of this journey with you guys. And I really appreciate it. And once you said it yesterday, it was his first note. It was my first note. And you said, we lost our edge to be great. And I clarified that today on the show, never the pursuit of that, never the passion of that. You always attack that. But we lost our essence to be great at the line of scrimmage, right? You and I have gone and talked at great depths of being able to run and stop the run, being able to run and stop the run. The essence of the circle of toughness that is your identity and everything you've done is you have a little time to reflect on that. Do you have explanations for maybe why that was
case? I totally have. Yeah, I totally own it. Yeah, I know exactly, precisely what, where we are and what needs to happen. That's why, you know, I battle because I know where it could go. And there's just sometimes, you know, you it's such a fine line to hold on to the edge of the right emphasis and the right focus and the right demand so that you get what you need to get done. And when I felt like I was losing time. Time was waning in the season and it was coming down to, holy cow, you know, we haven't quite found it yet. And that challenge was most frustrating. And that's why I take total accountability for it. I mean, I don't know that everybody talks that way about it, but I got to figure it out. I got to get it done. I got to make the changes, and I have to do it with the people that we have, and we got to make the right little tweaks and things that can make a difference. And that's the extraordinary part of trying to, you know, make these teams come together. And sometimes you got it better and more clear than others. And you think you're on track, and you hope it's just going to turn, and then, you know, you're battling it.
If you had another year to get that part right, what was your plan?
Oh, I'm not going to share that with you. Sorry. I'm not sharing that with you. Yeah, that's there we go. There's where
that's
we're
good trust things. Yeah.
Good try, Mike.
I'm noticing that there are a few of those things. All right, well, then let's get away from that. Let's dig into maybe something a little bit more holistic, and that is your philosophy and hearing you talk yesterday about the fun factor and everything you tried to bring from USC up here to Seattle 14 years ago. I honestly believe that you may have changed the way coaches are both perceived and also ushered in a new era of the types of coaches that are hired. Was it challenging? How did you go about changing the entire view of how coaches could act in the NFL?
Well, I don't know. I didn't go about doing that and didn't go about trying to do that. I just tried to do it the best way I knew how to do it. And the best way I could do this job of getting guys to come together and make a team and have rules and notebooks and get on a practice field and then take it to the games and be able to execute and play a great level and brand of this game. To me, it's always teaching. It's always, we're all teachers. And that's, so how can you best create an environment so people can learn? It's not about how well you teach, it's how well they learn. You know, that's the essence of it. So we're always concerned and focused on the learners. And so that means that we have to understand who we're teaching. So it's always learn the learners. You know, I'm dropping you the lines that guide the way we think. Learning the learners is understand who you're coming across to. And it doesn't matter if you have a great presentation. What matters is, do they walk out of there and they know what the heck you're talking about? And they can go, and can they go out on the field practice it, get it done, and then take it to the game and execute it when everything's on the line, you know. So it's just this long process that drew me to the human side of this thing, that you've got people that you're dealing with, and they're individuals, and they've got ways of seeing things and communicating, and I've got to figure out a way to blend the process so that we can maximize the learning and then take it to the field and maximize the execution, and then have the mentality to take it to the game and perform under all of the conditions and the stresses and the pressures that exist in the game, you know. And so
are you essentially saying it's a philosophy that people learn better when they're in a fun environment rather than with a school teacher rapping them on the knuckles?
Sorry, not that simple.
Yeah. Well, I was trying to simplify it. Yes.
No, I hear you. No, I know. It's a good try. It's the best way I can do it.
Mm.
I'm the facilitator. I'm the one that has to make it happen.
That's interesting.
So what's the best way I can convey the message in a way that I can consistently stay with it? I'm not all over the lot. I'm not flying off the handle. I'm not screwed up for the learners, and present in a you know, uniformed process manner, so that they can come out the other end of it. And when it comes down and you're going down the field and it's 1:52 left and there's no timeouts and you got to get a touchdown to win a game, they can do stuff right. So the key component here is you have to know who you are so that you can do your best job of presenting this whole process to a bunch of guys that come from all over the place. And you know, the different backgrounds, different styles, different makeups, unique qualities, and then bring it all together. And that's why it's how you can teach best so the learners can learn best. You know, I mean, it's that fundamental. It really is. But yet there's so much that goes into that. You know, just opening a notebook and going to the chalkboard and starting to draw stuff up, that's not it. That's just one way. That's just part of the way. And I think that there's a tremendous amount to it. And it comes back to the essence of it. It comes back to the individual. And it comes back to understanding the people that you're dealing with and the teachers and also the learners, and so that they can do a great job. And it takes a lot of insight. And it's what you talked about, Brock, you know, you got to understand and know people, and you got to figure it out, and you got to be able to see them, feel them, you know, along the way, so that you can best make sense, so they can best make sense, so everything can be connected and tight and as strict as possible. One of the things that I think people see when they hear the music and they see the fun and all, they think it's frivolity and it's not serious, and it's not. This is freaking by design. To the T, is to the letter of it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's as specific as we can make it. It's just the way that we communicate it. And it's the environment that we create for the learners to learn in. And with trying to keep it as fresh and clean and new and as brisk an atmosphere as you can keep it, so that we maximize our focus, you know, so that we get the information and we take it to the field and we take it to the game field and all that. So.
You know, one of the challenges, Pete, in your 14 years, man, such a journey, is that learning environment, that classroom changed, right? The CBA changed. The rules of hitting changed. The rules of contact changed.
No doubt.
Do you think that played a role? And I've talked to other coaches about this in the past, David Shaw down at Stanford, and when all that changed and no more two-a-days and no more pads and no more callousing and no more, you know, you talk about intellectual brutality in the circle of toughness. When that environment, that classroom dynamic changed on the field, how difficult was that?
No doubt, Brock, because back in the day, we got fined a lot around here for the stuff that we did. We practiced with it with a competitiveness that took us to a fantastic level of preparation. I mean, it was like perfect back in the day when we just walked that line all the time, you know. And it was thrilling for me to create the competitiveness and the cauldron of competitiveness that made it such that our practice field was freaking on fire, because we were dedicated to practicing this game of football better than anybody in the history of the game. That's what we were setting out to do. And to do that, it has to be at a high pitch, and it has to, the way I know it, it has to be at a high pitch, and it has to be competitive, and you have to be walking that edge. And you got to be just about on the verge of fighting one another, because you care so much about making it hard for the other guy, you know? And we understand all that. And in that, you know, there's a pushing and shoving. There's a fight here and there. We did too much. And you know, I had a kind of a rap sheet on me, you know, my fines and stuff. I'd been fined. There was one, at one point, there was 7 fines that had been levied around the league, and I had 4 of them, you know? And so, I kind I was okay with me, but the money got too big, and then the franchise got fined, and so we're getting in trouble, you know. So we had to back off some, and we took it so far. There was a moment on our practice field where we had a big blow up that was kind of the time when I had to take a step back. And Brendan was telling me, hey, you can't keep getting fined like this. I mean, you know, your mom's got to keep writing these checks. You know, I mean, it got that personal, you know. So yeah, there was a time when we had to back off. And it did follow some of the rules and some of the guidelines. They got a little bit, you know, we might have heightened the awareness of the league a little bit at a time. And we all got restricted a little bit more. But then it just stays relative, though. You know, guys, it's just relative. They can't do any more than you can do. And you just got to stay at the cutting edge of the competitiveness of it and try to know where that is.
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense, quite frankly. Yeah. And I love the story, and I like the idea of your wife cutting the check, because that's just... Yeah, yeah. Is that why you were so emotional talking about her yesterday? Because she cut all those checks for you?
No, that's not the why. That's not the why behind all that.
That was a beautiful moment, by the way. Thank you for saying that. And I thought your phrase, this is worth crying for, is it's a really nice turn of phrase. And it must have been a really incredible moment for you.
Absolutely.
Well, guess what? He's going to use that same phrase later in this interview, so you'll have to stick around and find out why Pete says it's worth crying for before the interview ends. We've got a whole lot more to go, including what happened at Pete's final dinner with all of the guys and teammates. Find out who was there, because it's a lot more than maybe you might have thought, and who was in the picture. Stick around. There's a lot more to come with Pete Carroll next on Brock and Salk.
This is Brock and Salk.
Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
All right, let's finish up this interview with Pete Carroll, and a huge thank you to the coach for spending as much time as he did with us yesterday. We taped this right after the show. Again, our apologies for some of the mix-up on the timing. We were hoping to talk to him at 9:30 yesterday, but we're able to do this much longer interview. So hopefully you're enjoying it. There's a lot of look behind the scenes. There's a lot more cool stuff to come. Let's get right back to it and get back to some of the on-field product and what happened over the last few years. Let's just to come back to the football field for a moment, because, you know, we've talked obviously quite a bit about the changes on the football team over the last few years, the last couple of years with Russ, and then what happened once he finally moved on. And your desire, we've talked about quite a bit, the circle of toughness and the running game and the balance and all the things that are important. As you look over those last, let's call it 2 years with Russ and 2 years without him, would you have done it any differently? Would you have tried to commit even more to the run? Did you compromise too much by trying to bring more of the passing game in and letting it affect maybe everything else? How do you feel about all of that now, a few years down the road?
There was a transition that was taking place, just as a natural transition. In the game, when your quarterback is a runner and he's mobile and he can escape, that's a factor in the game that really neutralizes a lot of stuff. And when you have that and you use it well, where it's a threat, but also it's a surprise, you know, the threat is in the scheming of the running plays, but also then the surprise is when they scramble. That factor really is a big factor in the game if you can control it. And often that type of player isn't really the passer that you know, the most proficient type of passer. He's the athlete guy more so. And when you have that blend, which we had for a number of years, where you know, just look at Russ's numbers, his rushing numbers, mm-hmm. when he was, you know, around 500 yards a year, that complement to the rest of the running game, that's what makes you like on top of the charts and all. I mean, it's that factor. And you can see it right now. I bet Lamar's probably at 700 or 800 yards rushing. I don't know where he is, something like that, you know, and that factor neutralizes really good defenses and all that. Anyway, so the point of that is that as we got kind of coming out of that phase where we really could run it a lot, and there was an emphasis of the passing game, we did go too far. We did go, you know, I wish we would have, you know, kept the blend more in the mixture, because I think we were more difficult to deal with that way than trying to out throw people and out yard them in the passing game. And we just kind of, just part of the transition and the growth and the adaptation to the players and the people that you have and the times and all of that that weighs in on that. But I did feel like I could tell we were getting away from that that blend that we had that was really made it special, that complemented the defense as so much too. The great defense we played in the days wasn't all just about the defense. It was about the offense staying on the field and being a problem and working clock and the yardage and all of that. That all blended together to make us a really difficult team for a long time in there. And as that, as you lose any aspect of that, then your balance is starting to shift. And so about your 2 years here, 2 years there, I don't know about that so much, but I do know that I was watching that happen, and we were trying to stay abreast, you know, of what our capabilities were. I mean, I'm talking deep. I don't know if you guys were getting all this stuff.
I think I'm getting to that quite a bit. Yeah, I think that makes sense. Said simply, it feels like maybe there's just a little too much compromise.
No, I don't think. I know you think it that way because, like, we compromise to somebody else's wishes and all that.
Well, not,
you
know, just like their wishes, but maybe their abilities. I mean, that's the, you know,
there you go.
I don't just mean their wishes. I mean their abilities, and it took you maybe a little away from, you know, what makes Pete Carroll football.
Well, things don't stay the same, you know, and you have to transition and you have to try to maintain, or you have to try to, you know, reinvent sometimes. And that's part of this. When you're there long enough, this is 14 mm-hmm. years of work. You go through phases, and we went through entire generations of players. You know, we coached them all the way through till they were done playing. And so that's of all of the stuff that happened here in Seattle, that was the new experience that I had. I had never coached where I'd coached through a lifetime of a whole flock of players. And you have to, you know, recreate what you're doing and who you are with other people. And that, you know, in college you had 5 years, you know, but that's not enough time. But when it goes to eight and seven, 8 and 9 years, guys start to lose their, you know, their chance to play the game. And so mm-hmm. things shift, and you have to go with it and move with it as best you can.
I'm going to imagine, Pete, those couple hundred to thousand text messages and calls over the last 24, 48 hours have been amazing and remarkable, and you let us into some of that. I'm going to guess in the days ahead, knowing the coaching fraternity, the way that it works and the relationships that you guys all have with one another, I'm sure there's going to be a call or a text or two that says, hey, Pete, tell me about this organization now. Tell me about John. Tell me if I end up being the guy and the next guy to fill your amazing, huge shoes. Tell me what I'm walking into in the relationship with John. What would be your counsel or your wisdom along those lines?
I honestly, I don't think there'll be that many calls. You know, I don't think people will do that. But people that I know will do it. People that I don't know, I think I'd be surprised if they're going to, because I'm still, you know, kind of still around, you know, and so I don't know that they'll separate me. But people that I do know, or people that represent people that I know, you know, maybe we'll get some of those calls. Mm-hmm. So what it'll be like, I'm just telling the truth. I'm like, what do you mean? I don't know what else I'll do. Tell them the truth. But there'll be a competitiveness about all this too, you know. There'll be a strategy to how we handle whatever, you know, the opportunities and options are to add people to the program. So, well, that, you know, this is totally on John. I'm not in the centerpiece of that at all. This is totally on John to do that. I'm just here to support him as best I can because I'm, you know, I love him. I want him to be successful. Whether I was part of the organization or not, I would be there for John, you know, if he needed me. And so I don't think it's going to happen as much as you might assume.
As people reach out to you, are you planning a little dinner with Belichick and Saban? Can we get the three of you guys together?
Do we have a little three-way text chain? I mean, I love all those other texts, but give me the three-way. Give me the three-way text.
Pretty crazy 24 hours.
It's pretty amazing. And I think all three of us are Croatian. And I can't even imagine how that ever happened. I gave those guys some trouble about that a while back. Huh. But within like 2 days, you know, we all have that same kind of heritage in our background. I don't know how strong it is with those guys, but it was a pretty big deal for me. And isn't that odd? I mean, it's just odd.
Number of ways your careers are interconnected. I mean, certainly you and Bill and Bill and Nick, maybe a little less so with you and Nick, but it's amazing. These three just absolute giants in the coaching field all, you know, changing within the course of 24 hours.
It's really unique and surprising. I can't imagine how that happened.
Well,
I really can't. Well, I thought it was, they were joking with me. They said Nick retired, you know, on that day. And then I saw Bill was on with Robert Kraft today, you know, talking. So they're doing it too. So pretty amazing.
I don't know what you hope to do next, but I guess we'll ask, do you see yourself coaching again?
I don't know that, you know, I've got plenty of energy for it and thought and willingness, but I can't imagine that I could, there's a place, you know, it's the right one. I don't know. So I'm open to everything, but I'm not holding my breath on that. You know, there's a lot of world out here that I'm excited about challenging and going after. And so if that happens, that happens. And we'll see. I really don't know what to tell you about that yet.
Brock's got an idea for you. Brock's got a job for you.
Yeah. College football commissioner.
Commissioner? You got to be kidding.
You got to create the job. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a ball guy. I'd be more likely to coach in a girls flag football.
If you're coaching girls flag football, then I hope Belichick goes back to Navy and coaches there. Hey, before we let you go, gosh, I have like 100 more things I want to ask you about, but we always like to play a little Rabel. So let me play you, one of my favorite Rabes moments from the NFC Championship game. Something tells me you will remember this moment pretty well.
Shotgun for Kaepernick, takes the snap, looks, fires near side, going for the end zone. Ball is tipped up and out of the way. Is it picked off? Is it picked off? It is. It's picked off in the end zone. The Seahawks intercept in the end zone. Richard Sherman tips it. Malcolm Smith picks it off in the end zone. The Seahawks are going to run this baby down. We are going to New Jersey.
How'd Rabes do on that one?
No, that was awesome. That's so good. Was that Wyman in the background there? Or who was
I think
that?
That's Warren in the background still.
That was a Hall of Famer losing his mind.
Yeah. Don't worry. He lost it again a year later because we have this one for you also. This was just 1 year after that.
Now we're having some fun.
Yeah, here we go.
He's going to throw down the middle. He's got a man. The ball is caught.
Game over,
it
baby.
Is a touchdown. The game is over. The Seahawks are going back to the Super Bowl in Glendale. What a catch in the end zone. It is curse.
Better way to go to a Super Bowl, tip pick for an interception or overtime comeback, throw it down the middle for the walk-off winner?
I'll take Curse's catch, but I love Richard's play and all that and Malcolm, but just the finality. I think we still had to kill the clock or something there because it's the last play, no time left. You know, that's as dramatic as you can get. You know, that it is really something that I know our followers in the 12s and got a chance to be part of. We've had so many exciting, extraordinary games like that, which I would like to kind of think that it's kind of us, you know, and we featured those, and those are by far my favorite parts of the game. You know, it's not even close. And to have a chance to finish in those moments and then to get the walk off, you know, and to get Golden's catch, you know, and against the Packers. And I mean, those kinds of things are just so heightened and so much alive, you know, and those are great moments. So I know it's hard on them, but I'm glad they have it in the background. I'm glad they got it in their history.
The guy who threw that pass, Russell Wilson, we saw the pictures of him out with you the other night. What was that like? You hadn't seen Russ, I'm assuming, since the game last year when you guys beat him on Monday night. What was it like seeing Russ for the first time?
Well, first, we went to Legions, you know, the restaurant that Cam and Richard have downtown in Bellevue. Give them a little shot. Beautiful place and really fun place to be. Yesterday, I said Mo Kelly, said, Mo, let's see if we get the band together, you know. And so we just put the word out, and guys just started showing up out of nowhere, you know. And we had a great evening, and we're having a blast. I'm in heaven, just in the middle of all the guys, and just, you know, having fun, hugging it up. And out of nowhere, the door opens up, and Mo knew what was going on. He knew something was up, and here in walks Russell and Charlie, you know. And out of nowhere, Russell just hits the scene. They flew up from San Diego or something like that, and surprised us, which just made it really fun. It was great to see all those guys. Great to see Russ. Just he had a blast with it, and he knew he was surprising us, you know. So he was top of the walk and the whole thing, which was great. And it was a great night hanging out. What was it? It was just back to the old days is really what it was. A bunch of guys and Glennon and a couple of girls that were there just getting back to the old days. But I'm walking out the door at the end of it, and we're getting ready to go. And Richard and Russell are standing in the doorway, and they both looked at me and said, look what had to happen for you to get us two talking to one another and having fun. You know? it was a great moment. And everybody was hugging, and everybody was loving and feeling it. And it was a really pretty scene of, you know, Seahawk lore and heritage and background and Lawyer Malloy. I mean, at one point, there's Lawyer Malloy, Cam Chancellor, Quandre Diggs, Jamal, all of the safeties and the DBs were all just in one big circle. You know, it was just, it just tied things together in a really gorgeous way. And it was really, really fun. I felt like I was in heaven.
That's some alphas, by the way. That's
pretty awesome.
No, you know, kidding.
That's some
no
guys
kidding.
Who could really
and
hit.
Neil, wait. And Doug standing there saying, not one of you guys can cover me. He said, I'm open standing right here, right now. it was priceless, just priceless.
Pete, I think I told you the story off the air this year. I so appreciated my last thought for you. These 14 years together, and, you know, I was on a field this season, and one of the defensive coordinators at a Power 5 school pulled me aside and said, hey, man, he was in the market for a little bit. Now he's not. He's like, I still, every Monday, listen to Pete. I listen to you and Salk talking to Pete every single Monday. I still learn, because every one of those interviews, I still learn something. And I've sat with hundreds of coaches over 17 years. We've done this a lot, Pete. I'm not going to say this is worth crying for, but I got to just thank you for all of the wisdom, all the patience, all the time, all the transparency. We'll likely sit with another head coach next season, but man, it just, you were really, really good to Mike and I. So really sincerely appreciate it.
I respect the heck out of what you guys do. I know it's hard and all that, and I try to help. I'm sorry I'm such a pain in the butt, though, over all this time. But it was really, really rich and good, and I appreciate every minute of it. And there ain't nothing better than hearing Rabes kind of walk us off. So if you want to do it one more time.
We'll do one more. I got to at least say thank you as well. I can't let Brock be the only one to say thank you. And I will say thank you differently, though, because for me, it's been more about the squabbling, the back and forth, and I've loved every second of it. Thank you for indulging me, for allowing me to spout off with my cockamamie opinions and to teach me quite a bit, not just about coaching or about football, but about leading and about coaching and about what it means to show loyalty and all the things that you've done so well here in Seattle. I know I speak for a lot of people. The moment I said we were going to be delaying this until the next day, we got about 100 texts that said, please just say thank you to Pete. Just thank him for me. Thank him for us. Thank him for everything he did, not just on the field, where I truly believe you changed the way Seattle sports fans view the world and are viewed by the rest of the world, but also, you know, just for learning and being open and transparent as you can be about what it's like to coach and how decisions are made and how football is played. I've learned a tremendous amount from you, and I really say thank you for that. It's been a really, really fun 14 years. Thank you.
Yeah, it's worth crying for. Appreciate
it's
it.
Worth crying for. All right, Maura, give him some more raves. We got to finish this the right way. Do we have one of the beast quakes? I don't think we have the first. I think we have the second of two beast quakes in. Why wouldn't it take place in Arizona, where every other major Seattle event seemed to take place? Here is one of Marshawn's great runs for you, Pete.
First and 15 now at the 21. Turn and hand to Lynch. He stutter steps. Breaks through the line. Makes a man miss. Cuts back outside right 30. 35, 40. Down the far sidelines. Pushes a defender. Keeps fighting. He's still moving. He's going to go. Down to the 20. The 15. They're chasing at 10. He dives in. Are you kidding me?
What a run.
Touchdown, Seahawks. Holy catfish. 79 yards. And that made Beastquake look like a walk in the park.
Awesome. Priceless walk-off right there.
All right, thanks, Coach. Fellas. Wait, really last question. Great. Last question. Who was the number 32? You told us that number 32 looking so good reminded you of somebody. Who's the number 32?
Jim Brown.
Thank you,
Coach. Not a goodbye. I'll see you around, Pete. Thank
absolutely.
You, man.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right, guys. Take care.
That was Pete Carroll in the final Pete Carroll show. I'm glad we found out it was Jim Brown, Brock. A lot of Marcus Allen thought, but it turned out to be Jim Brown.
No, the great Jim Brown.
Turned out to be the
late, great Jim Brown.
Oh, that's a pretty nice compliment, Chris Carson. You should be very, very, very proud of that comparison. Gosh, there's so much to come back to, and we're not even going to have that much time to do it. But what was your number one?
Well, right from the jump, he competed, and he took us a little behind the scenes on Monday and Tuesday. Schefter told us last hour these things are very, very fluid. I don't think John Schneider knew for months on end that this was going to be the end. They were going to have to go and compete their tails off. And ultimately, Jody chose John to move this thing forward. You know, 2 years ago, Jody chose Pete and John, not Russell, to move this thing forward. And you've got to be constantly moving it forward. And one of the challenges, and I hear this from coaches a lot, Salk, is it's not football people making these decisions. You know, and that's, I think, hard to hear for some. And I'm sure Jody and Burt Cold and some of those probably wrinkled them a little bit. Like, well, hold on a second. We might not have been a coach, but we're football through and through. And we are dyed-in-the-wool football people. And just because we're not in the rooms putting up schemes and coaching doesn't mean we're not football people. So that's always the tug of war that you do get. And it's at the pro level. It's at the college level. It's going on right now, you know, with Greg Byrne, the AD at Alabama. You know, now I'm sure he has Nick Saban and a few others in his ear, just as Jody had a few others in her ear. But it was her decision, a football decision. Could not have been a culture decision, because there's no way you listen to Pete there for 40 minutes and don't think he's unbelievably energized to fix the problem. Mm-hmm. But in his world, football people didn't make that decision. And I think from everything we've garnered and Adam himself, it was Jody that made that decision to make this change.
That was a lot, man. That was there's a lot in that interview. And Brock, that was one of the big ones. Certainly, I think you hear that he does still have the desire potentially to keep on coaching if the right opportunity
say,
was
though,
there for
he
him.
He did say, I can't imagine there's a place.
Right. So it would have to be a perfect spot. I don't know what that is. Maybe if Lincoln Riley comes to the Seahawks, he'll go to USC. I don't know what that would be. I know Richard Sherman suggested he should go coach the Chargers. That doesn't feel like the type of thing that would be like, oh, yeah, no, this is the perfect. Really? After all this, you're going to work for the Spanos? Like, I don't see that at correct. All. I mean, just no.
And be a tenant in somebody else's building? No.
Yeah, I don't see any of that piquing his interest. The only thing that would is just the fact that it's in Los Angeles.
But yeah, I don't think he's moving to Vegas. I don't think he's moving to Nashville. No. Don't think he's moving as a West Coast guy. Yeah.
Yeah, I
don't know.
None of that makes sense. I think he's got a lot of other interests. So appreciate all the kind comments that you guys have sent in. It was a touching interview. I agree. I was touched listening and talking to Pete, and it seemed at the end as if he was somewhat touched as well. There's also quite a bit there, though, Brock, about what went wrong the last few years, and whether it was the loss of Russell's legs to the loss of the ability to continue to use the running game and to veer too much towards the passing
compromise.
Game, the compromise that, you know, we disagreed on but sort of agreed on as to Pete
how
typically
different
do.
That environment did change.
Yeah.
How we were there for that brawl. We know what happened. Brennan was there as well. And like, Dad, this did not look good. Mm. Okay, we got dudes sucker punching, and we got Justin Britt throwing people over the ropes, and this is probably a step too far, so let's try to reel it back in. But we know the difference.
Yeah.
When this place was humming in 13, 14, and 15, and on that practice field, and all the fines that poor Glenna had to write checks for.
Poor
Glenna. And finally, enough was enough.
Yeah, poor Glenna. Poor Glenna. Yeah. I think that, again, I still think that's what Pete was crying about, that how hard it was to make her write all those checks. All right, we got a whole lot more to do. Let's reset this thing here in a moment, and then we will open up the phone lines as we always do Fridays at 9:30. So if you have thoughts on the next Seahawks coach, thoughts on Kalen DeBoer, et cetera, we'll start grabbing your phone calls here in a little bit, 866-979-3776. We'll come right back. Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.